attacked by a kindergartner. Der Winkelweiler back at it. And Lulzsec finally got enough lulls. All that and more on the Slongcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Slongcast, episode 37 for Tuesday, January 28th, 2011. As usual, I am your host, Kevin Slonka, and with me, Mr. Ryan Lancey.
What's up?
I was so excited, and you just kind of brought the whole thing down there.
Yep, I'm a little bummed.
Why are you bummed?
I don't know, just a little bummed. Nah, I'm kidding. This is awesome. Great to be back.
I'm the one who should be bummed. Getting over a cold, you probably noticed my voice is an octave lower.
It is.
I can talk like this.
With very little breakup.
Yeah.
It's low.
It's very low.
Low.
Yeah, and as you just noticed, my voice will crack every now and then, so that's going to be awesome.
He sounds like a 14-year-old.
I am not a 14-year-old. Not. Not. So anyways, top story of the week. Hacker School the Next Generation at DEF CON Kids. Now, when I saw this article, I'm thinking, this is probably the coolest thing in the world. And then I read the article, and now I think, this is probably the coolest thing in the world. You know, you tell this to some people that hackers are teaching kids how to hack, and they're probably going to say, that's horrible. Why would you ever want to do that? But I mean, I think it's good. Do you think it's good?
Well, regardless of what I think. I like to just use analogies. Analogies always help me gain clarity.
Analogies.
And my analogy is that, for instance, take karate, you know, like you can use karate to like do bad things. You can like beat people up or break their necks or break their arms or whatever.
Steal their money.
Yeah. Beat them up, steal their money. Right. But we also teach our kids karate to defend themselves. And, you know, I'm not saying that maybe, you know, it's not really like, oh, you can hack to defend yourself. But if you know what's happening and how to prevent it, it might help, you know, defend yourself.
I totally agree. I mean, you know, the security people that a lot of companies hire now, are they really security people? Like, can they really defend you? Do they know how to hack somebody? Can they think like a hacker that they can defend? They know what they're going to do and they can defend against it.
Yeah.
Most chances, you know, not. You know, most security people aren't of the hacker mindset. So, I mean, here's how I look at it. The kids who are going to be enrolled in this program are kids who, you know, their parents have seen have these computer skills,
mm-hmm.
would probably get in trouble if it wouldn't be for this. You know, they would probably, you know, further their hacker knowledge on their own, maybe get involved with some, you know, random groups here and there doing bad things. Some of them might go to jail because, you know, they have these skills and they don't know how to use them for good. I think this is a very positive thing. And I think it's also going to be good whenever they get old enough, you know, go to college, get a real job. They have these skills that other people just don't have.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go to this. Did they say the age range?
I saw something like fifth grade. No, 8 to 16.
I can pass for 16.
Yeah.
I can totally pass for 16. I just got to shave.
This is kind of interesting. I didn't read this article in depth, but I just noticed this one sentence here. It said, the U.S. National Security Agency is to bring a museum-quality cryptography exhibit this year. I guess they're going to bring it to DEF CON?
It appears that way.
Hey,
yeah.
Guys, if NSA is involved, it's got to be in the clear, right?
Seriously.
They didn't do anything wrong recently.
They have never done anything wrong. Wait, what are you talking about?
Anyway.
Yeah, so I wish I could go to DEF CON or Black Hat or any of them. I do not have the extra cash laying around to do so. But if your kid is interested in this kind of stuff, you might want to consider, you know, sending him to this program. It'd be a good idea. Now, are you going to be in the market for a new TV anytime soon?
Probably not. I have an okay-sized LCD.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. I mean,
is huge. Yours is bigger than mine.
It's only 40. It looks bigger than it is just because of the bezel.
Oh, it's only 47.
It's 46.
46.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine's a 42.
Yeah, looks, the bezel it makes it look bigger.
Yeah.
But, you
that's
know...
That's what she said.
I see what you did there. But, yeah, you know, mine works. And until mine doesn't work, I'm not going to be looking for a new TV. Unless the report from CNN is true and that Apple might start making TVs. You know, Jason Calacanis predicted this, what, 2-3 years ago? You know, pretty much as soon as Apple TV came out, that Apple was going to take the Apple TV device and integrate it into an actual TV and start selling TVs. And now it seems like, you know, the rumors are getting a lot stronger that Apple might just be doing that.
I don't see the point. I really don't. Because a couple reasons. One, we've been moving towards this, like, the TV's just a monitor, you know, sort of thing for years and years and years. And I've always liked that trend. Like, it always bothered me when I was really young and there was no way to hook my computer up to a big TV, you know, because while, you know, you can always get console games, but when I was a kid, I wanted to play my computer games on a big TV, like, right, you know, not all the time, but once in a while. And that was really hard to do back in the day without, like, expensive adapters and stuff. You know, and now the standards are pretty much converged. HDMI, DVI, basically the same thing, just a different connector.
Right.
And everything sort of cross supports everything else and it just works. So, and then you add into the fact, like, TVs generally last 5 to 10 years, sometimes longer. I mean, I have like a 30-year-old TV. It's not good for much anymore, but it still works. So it's like sometimes you can get 15, 20 years out of a TV.
Mine's going on 6 or 7 right now.
Yeah, mine's like 4, I think. 4? 2008? No. So only 3 years old, I guess. Or a little older than 3. But, you know, I've had TVs last a lot longer than that. And I don't plan on buying one unless it breaks.
That's the same way I am.
You know what I mean? It's fine. It's 1080p. Like, yeah, I'm sure they're going to come out with some higher resolution thing. But you know what? I don't give a shit. It looks fine.
Going to come out with 1180p.
Yeah. Like, I was never even that big, like, on HDTV itself. Like, I thought that, like, DVDs looked pretty good. Except on huge, huge screens. Like, you know, 50-inch, 55, right, and bigger.
55-inch projection screens.
Yeah. But, so, you add in that and then the fact that, like, sort of computer technology moves so quickly, you're like integrating this piece of technology, the Apple TV device, that will probably become obsolete in 2 years or 3 years, like most electronic devices do. You're integrating that into a sort of almost what's become a durable good. Like, you know, they always tend to separate out the electronics market from durable goods, like, you know, like washers and dryers. Yeah,
electronics are replaceable goods.
Yeah. And exactly. And I think TVs are sort of borderline. Like, they're sort of electronics and they're sort of durable goods. And I think this is a bad move. That's me. From an environmental standpoint, because people, like, want to chuck their TVs when they're, like, no longer compatible with, like, something or... You know, maybe this upgradable software will help, but...
Yeah, you can almost guarantee that the software is going to be upgradable. Like, the quote-unquote Apple TV device is going to be upgradable. But
but take this example. Not to interrupt, but, like, you know, look at the iPod or the iPhone. So first gen, nothing's compatible with the first gen phone anymore.
Right.
You know, all the apps require a certain OS level, and they probably don't support that OS level on the original.
Oh, they're kicking out like the 3G now.
Yeah, and then the 3G comes out, and it supports all these graphics, and it's like, okay, well, the old ones can't play the games with the graphics, and then it's like, oh, well, these new games need this new graphic standard. This is gonna, like, I think, bite Apple in the foot when this compatibility doesn't really work anymore. But anyway, I think that's probably the same case on these Apple TVs.
Yeah, what about the people, though? I mean, a lot of people have a lot of boxes. You know, I don't know what your setup is like, but, I mean, you've seen my TV setup, and there's, you know, there's the Dish DVR, there's the PlayStation 3, there's way too many boxes under my TV. If I could have a TV with almost all of those boxes integrated, you know, that can do DVR, that can do Netflix streaming, you know, has internet capability, no box, I don't need boxes anymore.
Right. Well, picture this situation, though. Picture the situation where cable boxes had been integrated into TVs, and there's no way to get anything else into the TV. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be the case with these Apple TVs. They'll probably add external ports on them.
Yeah, from the article, I believe they said that they're just teaming with a television maker, so they're not going to kill all the ports.
Right, but it's not beyond their control, especially on cheaper models.
Right, right.
You know, to be like, oh, you know, you're basically locked into our service with this TV.
Right.
Maybe one external device, like a DVD player.
Yeah, they could make it an all-in-one device type thing.
Yeah, and then it just makes it challenging. So there's ups and downs, I think with each scenario. I prefer to have separate box, and I think the Apple TV in and of itself, the current Apple TV, that's what it's called, right? Or the iTV?
Yeah, Apple TV.
Apple TV. Yeah. I think that in and of itself is a cool product. It's the concept's there. I still think their execution's been terrible, but
yeah. I mean, it's weird because they've taken the Apple TV software and put it on every Mac.
Yeah,
Every Mac has an application called Front Row, which when you open it is the Apple TV interface. There are a couple things that Apple TV does that Front Row can't do, some certain streaming things from iTunes or whatever. But other than that, I mean, yeah, it's you could also just take your Mac and hook it up to your TV and bam, it's the same thing.
What is interesting about this from a big picture point of view, regardless of whether you like the internal box, and is that Apple's clearly going after the big, the 10-foot screen, the 10-foot experience.
Right, the lean-back experience.
Yeah, which Microsoft has been going after for years and hasn't really been able to pull something together that just they have a solid product. And I think their execution on their product's good. I think that the integrator's execution on has been terrible. And that's Media Center.
Yeah, it's one of those products that is there, but nobody knows about.
Right, it's probably the best TV interface there is, and nobody uses it. And then you take that into consideration with the news last week that Google bought Sage TV, which is a popular DVR software that people use for their home theater PCs. And you have to wonder, I think everybody's going to be going after this 10-foot screen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even, kind of with the Xbox, doesn't the Xbox do Netflix streaming and things like that?
It does, and it can also serve as a home theater media center client. In fact, it's the only currently available client for home theater or for Windows Media Center.
Yeah,
it used to be you could buy these Media Center devices, but they were almost always around $200 or $300. So I think they just scrapped the idea and said, if you're going to buy one, buy an Xbox.
Right. If you're going to spend $300, buy a $300 Xbox, and you can also play video games.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I did with my PS3. I very rarely play games. Portal is the only game I've ever played on that machine. But if I was going to spend that much money on a Blu-ray player, I might as well buy a Blu-ray player that I can play games.
Yep.
So that was my thinking. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see who Apple teams up with and how they do it. Are they going to screw over consumers with a single port on the back? Mm-hmm. Or is it going to be actually something cool? Who knows? But our next story is actually very cool. So we talked a while ago about Google having their quote-unquote driverless cars. The cars that could drive themselves, there was somebody in the front seat, but they weren't driving. The computer in the car was driving. Well, apparently Google lobbied Nevada enough, and they are legal in Nevada now. Let's go to Nevada. I'm going to be there in 2 weeks. I want to ride in one of these.
Yeah. I think, this could bring some competition, among states that they're on top of these, technology, on the technology front. If I could move to a state, I'm not saying I'd move, tomorrow, but if there's a state that offers a superior transportation experience, I think it's, if you're in an area where there's a long commute, that's not my situation right now, but if you have it takes 45 minutes to go 2 miles or something.
Yeah. Could you imagine if they implemented this in and around DC?
Yeah.
And enforced the Google, I'm going to call it Google Car.
Yeah.
So if they enforce Google Car to be installed in everybody's vehicles, that would make everything perfect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let alone the fact that, it might help traffic patterns and everything, because they say these cars could communicate with one another.
Right.
Set traffic speeds based on traffic density to get the most, you may be able to maintain the actual speed limit with higher traffic densities. Beyond that, it's just imagine like accident or an accident-free world or nearly accident-free world.
Right.
Like that's 90% of the stress of driving in those environments is because you just don't know what the other idiots are going to do on the road. So,
yeah, if you have a computer behind
the wheel. No offense to all you idiots out there.
We love all you idiots. Actually, I don't. Yeah. I'm not going to speak for Ryan, but I do not.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm all for this. I think that it's a sad state that, you know, vehicles are still, that airline travel is still much, much, much safer. I mean, it's like two orders of magnitude safer than cars. That's with all the threats on, you know, with terrorism and everything else.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. And I hope more states, you know, look into this, and I hope Google actually looks into making this really integrated into a vehicle, because now it's just kind of hacked together. I wish you could buy a Ford Edge with Google integration, you know, something like that. That would be awesome. And have you seen, there's always a show, like every once in a while on Discovery Channel, they always have like these future tech shows.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is the smart car. You know, it wasn't the Google car, but it was like the cars that can drive themselves and communicate with other cars. And if there's an accident, route you around it automatically. Like this is, Google did that.
Yeah, I'm surprised California isn't at the forefront of this, because I know they've invested millions of dollars in their autopilot driving programs on California highways. They had some highways with dedicated lanes to test these things for years. Not, I don't think really in traffic dense areas, but, you know, to figure out how it would work.
Right.
You know, and there was all kinds of schemes before where they'd put sensors in the road or transmitters embedded into the road that the cars would read and know where they're at. But optics and all that other stuff have come so far that they don't even need those things. It just works.
Yeah, you can. I mean, the cameras in the car can read the road.
Yeah, and there's radars and stuff built in, so.
I want.
Me too.
But while we're talking about Google, apparently they're going to be in a little bit of legal trouble. It looks like the FTC is going to subpoena Google for some nefarious web tactics. Have you heard about this?
I did hear a little bit. Basically, I guess they're directing traffic to their own sites.
Yeah, I mean, duh.
That's what Google does.
This is what a search engine does.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I can see that if you go into Google and you search for something, you know, instead of returning up the YouTube results first and the Google Voice results and the Google Books results, maybe, you know, bring up the Amazon Kindle results and the Bing video or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I guess these subpoenas are just because all of the top results are Google-owned properties.
Yeah.
And people are like, hey, you can't do that.
Well, there's a lot of things that they're going to have to, you know, dig through to determine what did they do. Like,
right.
Because, you know, like, it could just be a simple case of, well, Google's popular, so it comes up first.
I think it's a case of popularity and algorithm speed, that it can find the results faster because they're on their own servers.
That could be too.
You know?
That, you know, if they did, if it's something as blatant as, you know, if page has 1,000 links and Google.
And domain name equals google.com.
Yeah, then, you know.
Then we have a problem.
Then there's a problem. But, you know, their part of this is like, is this just somebody being stupid? Like, you know, was it just that Google is using their own ad space to promote their own products in searches? And I don't know that there's anything wrong with that. Their ad algorithms are their own. That
right.
Ad space on their property is their property.
Right. Yeah, so, and I mean, as long as somebody is paying for the ads legally,
yeah,
it's okay.
Right.
And while we're talking about stupid, our next article from InfoWorld is just utterly ridiculous. You know, this falls along with Google because YouTube is now owned by Google. But imagine a world where if you watch a YouTube video, you go to jail. Seriously? I mean, seriously?
I know.
That's what this new Senate bill is trying to put into effect. It's not just that, but, you know, say I make a YouTube video and Ryan likes it and embeds it on his Facebook page or on his blog, you know, links back to it. That would be a felony, according to this new bill. Like, that is how ridiculous this is getting now.
And yeah, there's some things they have to prove. They have to prove that more than 10 or more people watched it within 180 days, and it has to deprive the copyright owner of at least $2,500 in potential income. So this will hopefully keep out, like, nuisance suits, in the sense that some, you know, if in that case, like, I would link somebody, like, Kevin his video.
Right. I'm not making $2,500.
Right. He's not going to, he doesn't have the revenue revenue sources for that. And there's, he's not monetizing it as is. So there would prevent that sort of things from happening because that would cause thousands of nuisance suits. But this is still could be misused by the lawyers from the RIAA or MPAA, whoever.
Yeah, because, I mean, they could just say any artist on a record label automatically could lose $2,500 because of a YouTube clip. Like, they don't even have to prove that. They just have to show that it's an artist, they have a CD, they're signed to a record label. Of course they would have made $2,500 if people would have bought the CD instead of watched this YouTube clip. Like, the lawyers could work around that very quickly. What I think this is getting rid of is fair use.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, right now, you know, everybody's afraid of copyright, but the truth is, you can take anything and use some of it in your own work, you know, under certain circumstances that you're not making money off of it, that you're, you know, editorializing, you're giving opinion. Like, I could go take a Lady Gaga song, cut up a part of it, throw it on YouTube, 100% legal, no problem. But with this new bill doing that, you know, I could possibly be sued because Lady Gaga lost money because somebody was listening to my 10 seconds of her song instead of buying the CD to listen to the whole song.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to find the article. I can't find it now, but I just happened to be reading something else. It was a couple, in the last few days, that, you know, they did a study on the donations to campaigns by copyright holders. And, you know, they've shown that there's been like something like $85 million donated to Democratic politicians. Democrats to the, you know, that are, a lot of them are in California and the Western states that support a lot of these copyright holders.
I was going to say all the politicians who are for this.
Right. Which are exactly. And that's my point, that, yeah, that this is becoming codified based on campaign donations about, you know, special interests, which, I mean, the music industry is huge, but it's still special interests. Like, among all of the people of the world, they represent a very small amount of people.
Right.
And while I do think people should be able to protect their copyright, it's not a crime. It's not criminal. It's a tort. There's a big difference.
And, not anymore.
Yeah. And anyone who has not researched this, please do. You know, look up the difference between crimes and torts. There's a difference in the legal system. You know, if I trespass on your property, it's not a crime. It's a tort. You could, you know, there can be fines imposed, but it's not something that goes on my record.
And you don't go to jail for it.
And you definitely can't be in prison for it. And because imprisonment is a big deal. Like, that's, you're actually like taking away someone's rights for you just, you know, taking away possible income sources. And I don't condone piracy, but there's still an amendment, you know, in our Constitution that says that the punishment should fit the crime, you know, and this is definitely not the case, especially making it a felony. I mean, misdemeanor is one thing, felony is a whole other.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, somebody has a lot of money coming in from somebody to want to push this bill through. But you know what? Let's keep on the track of ridiculosity, and let's talk about Der Winkelwasses.
Der Winkelwei.
Der Winkelwei. Ah, Der Winkelwei. So apparently, if you didn't hear, last week, the big suit that we all heard about when we watched the movie The Social Network, you know, the Winklevi going against Mark Zuckerberg. I'm going to call them that from now on. It's like they're a super enemy. But they gave up on that. They're like, you know what? We're done. We're not going to appeal. It's over. And everybody thought, wow, maybe they actually got a little smart. Literally the next day, they put another suit against Facebook, trying to show that Mark Zuckerberg, and I quote, intentionally or inadvertently suppressed evidence during the previous case. Really? Like, really? I mean, what is wrong with these two people?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really feel that bad about what's happening. Because there's a couple reasons. One, I think that I have a lot of doubts that, you know, based on the things that have been reported, and even this other guy who claims that, you know, there's somebody else claiming he gave Mark Zuckerberg $1,000 like to initially invest in Facebook, and he was never repaid. And
there's something going on with that still.
Yeah, it's still a court case. So I don't believe that Zuckerberg's being honest. You know, I or has been honest with the people he's worked with. I think there's some, you know, there's got to be something. Now, it could be just a case of people going after the big dog in town, the person making all the money. But
do you think it's him intentionally being devious, or do you think it was him at a time in his life when he didn't know any better, and he's like, oh, I could just push that to the side, no big deal, and it turns out to be a really big deal.
It possibly could be, but it doesn't erase the fact that if he made a deal with somebody, that he's going to owe them whatever he did promise them. You know, like oral agreements are still enforceable if they can be proven that it actually happened. If there's a transfer of money, so in terms of the Winklevi, because they really didn't give him any money. It's just there was just their idea, and
ideas are up in the air. You know?
And there's supposedly some code that was stolen that they had given him a code base that they had at least that's what was insinuated in the movie. I don't know how true that is.
Yeah.
But then nonetheless, I think there's something up. And you know, I'd like to see it come to fruition eventually, like that it actually is tried or that there's a final agreement to it. I don't want to see it go on forever. But it's interesting.
Yeah, it looks though that if Mark Zuckerberg keeps winning, that it will go on forever because the Winklevi will just come up with another suit to slap against him in Facebook.
The other part of me, too, is like I don't feel any love for Facebook because I still don't think they provide anything super valuable. I think social networking was already there. I think they made a cleaner interface for it, but they've just found a way to be super invasive in our lives, and I don't even think we realize it. And that's what why I don't have any like love for the company itself.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are stories all over the internet, you know, we're not covering any of them, but that you know, companies are now getting access to quote unquote search engines that will pull information, you know, from your social networks and stuff. You know, there's been all kinds of stories on the internet about companies digging into your social data, and there's really nothing you can do about it. Because other companies are agreeing with it, partnering with them.
Yeah.
You know, it's happening.
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be some sort of agreement on this stuff or ground rules. Because, you know, like take, for instance, Web Archive. Web Archive has been prevented from, like, continuing its mission to archive the web because, like, copyright holders have been forced and said, no, we don't want you to archive our website. Not even people that, like, own any, like, media or... But, like, why are they allowed to archive our lives and then mine it for data? That's not cool.
Because we give it to them
our own will. Well, right. I don't think, like, again, it's like just because you give your rights away doesn't mean that you're really actually legally allowed to give your rights away. Like, you know, you can't say to somebody, oh, you're allowed to torture me. Like, there still could be punished for a crime. I'm not saying this is criminal yet, but, or should be criminal, but that there, I think there's something wrong with that, you know, that archiving and mining this data is not, I don't know. I don't like it.
You know what? Where is Anonymous and Lulzsec to go after these people who are invading our lives? You know, they go after Sony.
They all work for Facebook.
That could possibly be it.
Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Ooh, you have some inside information. So while we're talking about Facebook, Facebook will be introducing a new ad format. So we all love ads. I haven't seen an ad on Facebook in years, but apparently they will be putting out ads in the same place on the right-hand column where ads always are that kind of trick you into thinking they're just regular Facebook posts. They're still called sponsored stories, and there's a comment box underneath them. So if you see an ad for the Mayhem Guy, which is what's on this page from fastcompany.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's seen the Mayhem.
Yeah.
I think it's, what is it, Allstate?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. If you see that ad and you're like, oh, I love this guy, and you comment on that, that gets posted on your page, that gets reposted in other people's news feeds, that Kevin Slonka, you know, liked Allstate because I commented on their ad. You know, like, this gets spread around your Facebook presence, and you really don't even realize it's happening because you just think you're commenting on another story. What do you think?
They're going to ruin it.
Trickery, I mean, or?
Well, I don't know if it's trickery, but they're just going to ruin it. I mean, they're
going
to...
What do you mean?
They're going to...
Like, they're not going to do it right, or they're going to ruin people's experiences?
They're going to ruin the experience of Facebook. Like, I mean, it's already gone down a pretty deep hole.
That, Farmville.
Yeah, I mean, well, to be honest, like, some of that's... Somehow, I'm getting less and less of that spam. I don't know how, if they fix
something. I'm getting less and less Farmville. I'm getting more and more of every other freaking application on
there.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. But it's just... It's not cool. Like, I'm more, the more and more I look at what I do on Facebook, I'm like, I could do this on Flickr. You know? Like, I could just, I just want to post photos, like Flickr and a blog.
Yeah, I mean.
And if people want to check it out, go check it out.
Yeah, if you look at the stuff that I do on Facebook, I don't post things on Facebook. I tweet, and Facebook pulls in my tweets. That's how all of my updates happen. The only other thing I do is I post photos every once in a while. And you're right. Flickr and a blog, like, that's all I do. You know, I don't use it the way they probably want a Facebook user to use the site.
Right.
But we're the vast minority, or maybe a not so vast minority, of people who don't put their entire lives on that site.
I think people don't notice as much, because I think a lot of people just use it through their phone.
I have noticed that. I've seen way more people using it through, and it kind of makes me mad, because the experience isn't quite there on their phone. So they miss things. Like, if I comment on a story and I want somebody to reply to that comment, they don't. They just make some random comment, because on the phone, they don't see the comment that I posted right away like they would on the website.
Yeah.
So they just type their normal thing like they normally would. And I'm like, but I asked you a question. Why did you not respond to my question?
Yeah.
You know, like, things like that. Like, the phone experience sucks as far as I'm concerned for Facebook. I don't know. I really don't like these sponsored commentable ads. But it's, I mean, Friday, June 24th was the date of the article. The article said they were to launch next week, so that's this week. So if you happen to see these on Facebook this week, don't comment on them. Stay away. And one last Facebook story, and this one is a good one. I don't know if you guys saw, I just did a fist pump.
It was awesome.
Yeah. It was one of those Peter Griffin, you know, Family Guy cutaway fist pumps. It was amazing. So y'all remember a Geohot? George Hotz, the guy who got sued for jailbreaking the PS3 and doing all that hacking. Well, Facebook has hired him. I am all for this. I mean, so here's the thing. There's two ways that you can take this story. One, you can see that a very big company in the limelight notices somebody with wicked skills. And they're like, dude, we need to hire this guy.
You got wicked skills, dude.
You got mad skills.
Mad skills.
And on the complete opposite end, you have, you know, completely ethical people, you know, going through college, you know, applying for jobs, trying their hardest to get a job. And they're like, whoa, all I had to do was hack somebody and I would get hired by Facebook? Why didn't I do that? You know, so it's either happy that Facebook is noticing this or mad that big companies are hiring people who do bad things.
Well, I don't know that it's either or. I mean, I think everyone's pretty well agreed that Geohot was basically...
He's a good guy.
A good guy, not a, like, well, at least that anyone knows that he was, like, a hardcore black hat, whatever. You know, he was just trying to make his system do something that it didn't do, which was run an operating system. A different operating system.
Right.
So I think rewarding somebody for that kind of effort is much different than, you know, just plain old hacking.
And he's also like the lead iPhone jailbreaker. Like, yeah. He gets in contests with other people to see who can jailbreak the newest version of iOS when it comes out. So yeah, I'm with you. But I do think that's cool. I'm interested to see what he's going to be working on. You know, is Facebook going to have an iOS department? Because they're certainly not going to have a PS3 department. You know, iOS is really his other big skill.
Yeah.
Maybe the next version of the Facebook app is going to be amazing.
And it'll run on a PS3.
Yes. Awesome. That's what they've been reading my diary. So our next couple of stories, we talked last week for the first time about LulzSec, the hacker group. And it seems that this week is going to be the last time. Because we have three articles that go completely together. The first one from ABC Net Australia is that some of the LulzSec hackers themselves got hacked and had their identities and information exposed. And then, you know, right on top of that, the information that LulzSec said they were going to give to the people, you know, all of this government information and, you know, all the stuff they said they were going to get, they released it a day early, you know, this bunch of stuff about the Arizona Police Department. And then we see an article right on top of that, LulzSec is over. It's like, yeah, you know, we said when we started this was going to be, you know, a 50-day thing. We're just going to come out, hack people, you know, show all this information from governments and banks and stuff. We knew it was going to be 50 days. The 50 days is up. We're done. Peace out. See you guys later. What do you think about the series of three articles, like what they do and that they're just now done?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that this is the right way to go about this stuff. Like, you know, I think these...
You think they did hacktivism wrong?
Yeah, I don't even know if hacktivism is such a great word with that context of hacking. You know what I mean? Like, hacktivism should be returning hacking back to its core roots, which is just using computers to do things they didn't do before, not hacking into systems.
Okay, well, hacktivism as the way the world sees it is hacking for political merit, you know?
But I know what it means. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I don't like the whole idea of it. It's just... And I'm afraid to comment it because I don't want them to hack my account.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I'm going to go back to the same thing I said about Anonymous as well, because it seems like a lot of these people are working with Anonymous, and that I generally agree with the reasons they have for hacking people. Like, you know, these companies do bad by citizens and they're like, you know what? Screw you guys. We're going to show you who's better. But then if you look at this, the second article from ZeroPaid, the article where it shows what they released in their big posts on the Pirate Bay, and it's a bunch of information about the Arizona law enforcement. Apparently, Arizona has some sort of bill, SB 1070, all about the racial profiling and anti-immigration, you know, all that crap that Arizona made the news for a couple months ago. So they hacked them, and they released a bunch of documents that were labeled, you know, law enforcement sensitive, not for public distribution, for official use only. And it was stuff about their border patrol, their counterterrorism, you know, all things about gangs and cartels and Nazi groups. And they say, you know, that they're fighting an unjust war on drugs. So that's where I kind of stopped and said, wait, really? Like, is it really bad that we're fighting against these cartels and trying to keep drugs off the streets? Is that really why you did all of this? Because if that's the case, I don't agree with you anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So,
well, there's a lot of activism out there just in general about legalizing certain kinds of drugs. And, you know, there's a lot of like a lot of these cartels and wouldn't exist if they were just legally distributed.
Very true.
Like tobacco or alcohol.
Yeah. There's a couple of politicians now trying to push for a legalized marijuana bill.
Yeah. I mean, I don't pretend to know all the social impacts of either or, but I mean, it seems to me that the war on drugs hasn't worked over time. Like,
it's been going on forever, and it's gotten worse.
Yeah, I mean, the whole war on drugs started in, like, the 80s or something, and it's, you know, we're talking, like, close to 30 years later, and I think it's just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that there just isn't more people doing wrong with it, but, you know, not that we haven't thrown enough effort at it or something, but... I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but you look at other countries like, what's that one where it's like legal, almost all drugs are legal? Is it Amsterdam?
Amsterdam.
And they don't have any problem. They hardly have any problems with it.
Yeah, and a lot of European countries also have like, you know, 16 as the legal drinking age or 18.
Yeah, and there's a lot less like,
there's no alcohol. Drunk driving.
Yeah, zero drunk driving and alcohol. All those penalties are supposedly stiffer over there. You know, and alcoholism is less and... It's, I don't know, it's hard to say what our problems are here in the United States. We also have, like, more gun deaths than any other country, too.
Oh, we also have more rednecks than any other country. See, I can say that because I'm not afraid of rednecks hacking me. I know that they don't know how to hack me and take my stuff down, so I'll say that. So let's move on before I get myself shot. So our last couple stories end up in the mobile arena. Now, we talked last week about... Microsoft basically shunning Silverlight developers and .NET developers with the beta releases of Windows 8. And we see another article this week where they do it again, this time for Microsoft SkyDrive, a web service that provides cloud storage. You know exactly what it sounds like, SkyDrive. It's a drive in the sky. They are switching. It's no longer Silverlight. It's HTML5, HTML and JavaScript. So I know last week that your opinion was somewhere along the lines of, yeah, they might not have just, you know, said Silverlight up front, but they're probably going to work it in, you know, in .NET. They're just not going to drop it in Windows 8. What do you think now that some of their services are starting to drop their languages?
Well, I mean, I read this article, and I'm not sure exactly what they mean by they're like they've dropped it. Does that just mean like the front end is made from HTML and Java?
That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, I know there's a whole like eat your own dog food thing, but it's also like, you want the website to be compatible across as many browsers as possible, you know, eventually, once right. HTML5.
And Silverlight is not that answer.
Right. You know, and then there's other points they've made that, you know, downloading a plugin is a lot easier than getting a new version of a browser and blah, blah, blah. And there's some truth to that. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're... I actually tried to do a little bit of homework on this one to see what, you know, what's out there in the rumor mill about... Silverlight, and I mean, I don't think .NET's going anywhere because .NET is their main programming language. Well, not language, but environment.
Yeah, right.
You know, runtime environment for Windows. And there's so much like business intelligent apps out there that are written in that, and I don't see that going anywhere in the next 10 years.
Yeah, they could kill
it. It'll evolve.
Yeah, they could kill it now, quote unquote, kill it. But it's still out there, and people are running it, and they're just not going to get rid of it.
Yeah, it might be on a downward trend. I mean, it's been around for 10 years.
Yeah.
The first version of
it came out around the time XP came out.
Yeah, 2002-ish is when it came out. So it's almost a 10-year effort. I mean, I think it only got really good in the last like 4 or 5 years, but, you know. I still think it's a great programming environment. I haven't used Silverlight, so I don't really know a whole lot about that. But, I mean, I think the adoption of Silverlight was pretty slow to begin with, and it hasn't been all that popular.
Well, yeah, there was no adoption. Like I have never seen Silverlight being used outside of Microsoft sites except for one thing. It was like the MLB All-Star game or something. Like there was some sporting event that the only way you could watch it was
Silverlight.
Yeah. But other than that, I've never seen it used anywhere.
Yeah, I just don't know a whole lot about Silverlight, but you know, I just don't see a whole lot of like oh no, this is going away. You know,
nobody's complaining.
There's like superfluous evidence that this might be the case. Like, you know, they said, "Oh, they often like just kill a product, you know, into oblivion and then announce that they're getting rid of it." But I don't know.
I'm going to say that I think they're going to kill Silverlight because that's a front-end technology. .NET, if they do decide to kill it, it's not going to be now or anytime soon, because .NET, though there is the framework that you can run front-end apps with, it's more of a back-end technology.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, do you agree with that? That there are more back-end applications that run .NET than front-end applications?
Yeah, oh, I think so. Well, I mean, I'd say more like thick client apps than thin client apps, in the sense that there's more like, you know, Windows native programs written in .NET than there are websites using Silverlight.
Okay.
You know, whatever the equivalent would be.
Right.
You know, number of users hitting those sites compared to number of desktop users. But, you know, that I think that's pretty safe to say. But, you know, the article points out, too, though, that VB6 is still in there and it's been around forever. So.
Yeah, VB6. I remember learning. I programmed in VB6 in college. That was my my second programming class in college. It was a lot of fun. Stored my projects on floppy disks. That's how I turned in my final.
Oh, yeah.
3.5-inch floppy. Giggity. Okay, moving on. Our next story from IT World. We had talked a while ago about Verizon going to drop its unlimited data plan. Now we know. 2 weeks. Actually, it's only a week. Because as of last week, it was 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Now it's one week. And so if you were thinking about switching to Verizon with a smartphone, do it right now. Do not wait. Do it before Friday. Make sure that you get the unlimited data plan. Or else you're going to be paying the same thing that every other company makes you pay. You know, 4 gigabyte plans for tethering, 2 gigabyte plans without tethering, blah, blah, blah. Do you... You have Verizon, right?
I do.
Do you have an unlimited plan?
Well, sort of. I have, like, the BlackBerry plan. And it's unlimited, but it's just the... It's basically the version, the unlimited plan for BlackBerry.
Yeah, that's what AT&T did with the iPhone. There's the normal unlimited plan, then there's the iPhone plan.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, it has something to do with the fact that they have to, like, you know, Verizon actually provides some of the BlackBerry, like, services that you would otherwise get from an enterprise.
Right. They have their own BES server or something.
Yeah, it's actually BIS. But, like, back in the day, you wouldn't have been able to have a BlackBerry unless you had a BES. So, anyway...
That is true. You know, I didn't think about it until you just said it, but back in the day, only companies could have BlackBerries.
Yeah.
It was only a couple years ago whenever retailers started selling them to consumers.
Mm.
I've never put that together.
So they have this thing called BlackBerry Internet Services, which is like when your phone's not, what do they call it? Partitioned? Or there's a name for that. When it's like attached to a BlackBerry server.
When it's not managed by a server?
Managed, but there's like some BlackBerry term for it. You know, but anyway.
Provisioned.
Provisioned. When it's not provisioned by a BES, then it needs to be provisioned by a BIS, which is the BlackBerry Internet Services stuff. So, you know, it says, hey, welcome to the Verizon BlackBerry network when you like registered for the first time and your mail still goes through all their BlackBerry servers. Like, well, the mail that's, if you use the notifications for.
Right.
I use Gmail on my phone, so it doesn't really matter. But anyway, yeah, it's pretty... I'm not surprised Verizon did this. It's the way the industry's trending. But I think it's just really pricey. And, you know, the prices are pretty steep.
I think it's the first move before LTE hits big. You know, because remember we saw reports before that... what was it? 4G LTE was going to be unlimited data and they were capping 3G, or were they capping LTE and giving unlimited 3G because they realized that people would use one way more than the other?
I think it was your first one. It was going to be that LTE was unlimited.
Because 3G nobody could use it all.
Right, and 3G was capped. But, you know, they did say that like current subscribers will be grandfathered into their plans, but like I wonder if that counts like... after you upgrade too, like I saw something about if you upgrade you're still grandfathered.
Well, I mean the normal way that they work is if you change your plan in any shape or form that constitutes a change of plan and you lose anything you're grandfathered in.
Right. So
if you were to add on LTE, that's a change of plan.
Right. Well, I don't think there do you have to add it though, like because friends I've had friends that have the charge and you know, they have like an unlimited data plan or whatever, like the current version of it. And, you know, they were testing the 4G services a couple days ago in town here and bam, they had 4G. Like instant, like no registration, nothing. It just worked. So my question is I don't know that Verizon's making a distinction in their billing between 3G and 4G service. When you have an unlimited plan.
Yeah, I mean, we have yet to see whether they're going to have separate data plans for 3G and 4G.
Right.
You know, they've never said on the record, this is what we're doing.
Well, I mean, people have 4G now, and I don't think they have separate plans. Like, when you sign up, I don't think it makes any kind of...
Yeah, I'd have to ask, you know, some of our friends that have, like, Sprint 4G, quote-unquote 4G, or AT&T 4G, and see what they do.
Yeah, those ones I'm not sure about, but I don't know. I'm disappointed, but not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, they've been testing LTE a couple days ago around here, so that means it's not that far off. You know, the Verizon website said it was going to be by the end of this year.
Yeah.
We would have LTE, so I'm not that mad because when LTE comes around, I'll probably switch to Verizon to get LTE, and you know, with that much speed, they don't have to worry about me using all of it. You know, I'm not going to be able to do that.
All of what?
Go through all the bandwidth. You know, like, there's so much bandwidth because it's so fast. They don't have to worry about, you know, me using so much because I just can't. I can't saturate a 4G link.
Oh, right. Well, but you'll be able to chew through your allotment pretty quickly.
I'm still hoping that they do the unlimited 4G, you know, because they know that
people...
Oh,
I don't know that that's going to be the case.
I mean... They have to, you know, they don't have to, but it's so much. The bandwidth is so huge, people can't chew through it. Like, why would you cap something that people can't chew through?
But they say this. They say the one ever so slightly bright side is that 4G LTE will cost the same as 3G. Of course, you'll be able to burn through your data even faster.
Is that just the?
I mean, that's the article.
Column writer being quippy.
It could be, but I mean, I was under the impression these were for 4G and 3G, but maybe
if they put a 4 gig limit, or it's probably going to be a 2 gig limit because 4 gig is only for tethering. If they put a 2 gig limit on LTE, people are going to chew through that in a day. Like, they're literally going to stream Netflix for a day and they're going to be done. Like, they can't do that. You know, they give somebody. Yeah. You know, it's like giving somebody a Ferrari and saying, got to drive it at 20. Can never go above 20.
Well, it's a little bit more like saying, here's a Ferrari, drive as fast as you want, but you only get one tank of gas per month.
Yeah. Yeah, drive it as fast as you can. You have 60 minutes.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. So our last story of the day is about Apple's iCloud. And we talked about Apple's iCloud whenever we talked about the WWDC announcements, and that it's Apple's online music service, not a streaming service, just a music locker service. Cooler than all of the other ones because it does music matching. You don't have to upload your music. It just looks at the fingerprints of the songs and says, oh, you have it. Here is our better copy that you can now use. So that's cool. But a lot of people have been thinking, since Apple is getting tight with, you know, the RIAA and all of these labels, is this going to be a honeypot for finding people with pirated music? Hmm. What do you think?
I mean, it's an interesting concept. They could do a lot of like statistical analysis on the music that's uploaded, or that's hashed, and determine like distribution of a song, maybe through some other database source they have, like Kazaa Records or something.
Well, all they have to do is, you know, find a song that is known to be pirated, get the hash, and see how many times that hash appears on people's iCloud drives.
Right.
You know?
Well, you mean across all users?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but then, to maybe not to pinpoint the people who have it, but to pinpoint the person that sourced it.
Mm.
Like that, like how many times that file got copied to get actual damages on that copy of the file. Like that, I think, is the more appropriate case. Like, because I was commenting to a friend today, I'm like, I don't see how they could ever. I mean, here's an example. I've had like many CDs stolen from me because my car was broken into, and a binder of about 100 or 200 CDs, Case Logic case, was taken. So I lost probably, I had a lot of mixed CDs in there.
Hundreds upon hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, but a lot of CDs, like at least 100 store-bought CDs. Excuse me.
We ate supper before this.
Yeah, excuse me. It's like I had some ginger ale and it's like it's really hit me hard.
ginger ale. You're not drunk or anything. It's just ginger ale.
No, it's just ginger ale. A little bit of indigestion.
Indigestion.
R-O-A-L-D-I-D-S, right? Spells relief. I think that them trying to make the case that, like, if I had a song on my PC that was a copied file from the internet, like I know there's probably ones there, because back when these CDs were stolen, it took about like an hour to rip a CD. Well, not maybe an hour, at least 20 minutes.
I remember doing it. It was like a long time.
And then to encode it to MP3, like to actually put it into MP3 format, it took like twice as long. So it was like an hour.
It was an hour.
Yeah, I think it was like an hour per CD to do it. And I'm like, I did not want to invest the time in it. There was not software to automate this back then. Like now there is. Like you can get, what's it called? Easy CD Creator? Or no.
There's an open source tool called
Exact Audio Copy. Did you ever use that one?
No, I've used a CDEX. It's a Windows version, and I've used Grip on Linux, and they both do the same thing. You know, go to CDDB, get all your listings, click one button, done.
Yeah, that's basically how Exact Audio Copy worked. You pop in your CD, it goes, gets the names for it, and then it rips them all to audio tracks, and then it sends it to LAME or whatever encoder you want. But it has
most use LAME. Yeah.
You know, LAME's a good encoder. you know, bam, puts it in a folder. You can organize it by the folders by artist and everything else. And then when it's done, you just drag all the files into iTunes and you're done. You know, and you can do a bunch of CDs in a night while you're sitting there browsing the web or whatever. But back in the day, this took like an hour per CD. It was not automated. You had to go and type in the tracks, or maybe like one program would support getting the CDDB labels. So instead of doing all that, I would just download the things because I'm like, I own a copy. I'm allowed to have an electronic copy of this, like a backup of it or whatever. You know, if you follow the whole, like, you know, back in the early days of computing, there was a, some landmark cases that established that, yes, you are allowed to make a backup copy of your software media for your own use. And that's how I looked at it. I wanted a backup copy. My, all my CDs went into the closet and all my MP3s went on to my computer or eventually iPod.
My parents have all my CDs.
Right. So I'm sure that I have, there's probably some files in there that have like,
I can guarantee you mine are.
Yeah. So I don't understand like how they can use that as an argument that I copied the file. It's like, no, I made a copy of the file. I just used the internet to do it.
Well, so I don't think they care because they have no way of proving one way or the other.
Yeah. So I don't think this is really going to be a honeypot sort of thing for the downloaders of music, but more for the sourcer of a source of it. Like, to like, they know this IP address created this file and distributed it, but what they don't know is how many people have it. And this is a way to prove damages.
Well,
you know what I mean? It's a way to prove that 5,000 people have a copy of this file, and since 5,000 have it, and it's a $500 infringement per copy or whatever it is.
See, maybe they can figure out who initially uploaded a known pirated file, because maybe they have timestamps on uploads and they see this hash hit this timestamp. It's the earliest one. Mm-hmm. So this guy sourced it. But he might not have. He might have just been the first one to put it in iCloud. We don't know where it came from or who made the original copy, or, you know, did he get it from Napster? Did somebody else 10 years ago pirate?
I'm not saying that uploading it to iCloud starts the case. I'm saying that they have existing cases right now with information from Kazaa, Morpheus, and all those networks, Napster, whatever, that says that this file was created by this person and shared by that person on this date. They don't know who this person is.
I gotcha.
All right. But now they know the hash to that, and then they compare that to the number of songs on iCloud that have the same hash, and they say there's at least 5,000 copies out there. And using statistical analysis based on internet distribution, we can extrapolate that this actually means that there's 5 million copies out there, at least. Like, conservatively say that.
Right.
You know, or something. And then that proves damages, and it's able to, you know, source some money out of somebody or persuade some ISP somewhere else to, like, what, you know, whatever it is.
Right, right.
That may be what they could use it for. I'm not saying they're gonna, but the data's there.
Yeah, worst case scenario, that's what they could do.
Yeah, that's they could safely do that.
Yeah, there were a lot of articles or a lot of ask slash doc questions going around, people saying, you know, I've been hearing that iCloud is going to start talking to the RIAA. Can anybody recommend MP3 ID3 tag cleaners? I just want to run my entire thing through a cleaning program to strip out, you know, because whenever people pirate music, they always put their hacker name in as the comment tag or something.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a marker in there. They're like, I want an MP3 scrubber. Can anybody recommend an MP3 scrubbing application?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I saw those too. And the other thing is, if you do want anonymity, I mean, you could just like dump the thing to Wave and re-encode it again.
Right.
That would screw the hash up enough.
Yep.
Encode it at a different bit rate. Add some random noise to it. Like,
The hash is completely changed anyways, because you're not going to put the exact same ID3 tags in that it previously had.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, people might think that, oh, I buy my music from iTunes, I buy my music from Amazon, I'm okay, I can put it up there, I can give it to my friends, it's legally bought. But for those of you who don't realize, you know, your usernames and account numbers are embedded in those files.
Right.
So if you do that, they will know that it was you. Like, they don't have to do the statistical analysis Ryan was talking about earlier. They know it's you.
Yeah.
Your name is in the file.
Yeah, the ones bought with or without DRM.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
If it's bought from one of the major retailers, it's going to have personally identifiable information.
With DRM, it's harder to get rid of, but Amazon MP3s that you buy, your account number, the transaction number, lots of stuff is in that file.
Yeah.
So good luck with all you pirates out there. So that's all the articles we had on the list. Have you seen anything that popped up recently? I have two articles that just popped up today.
Well, one thing I forgot to mention with the talks about the automated cars, there was a pretty interesting article on Wired. It was titled "When Active Safety Systems Fail, Who Pays?" And there's some interesting situations. They were basically talking about a car that they were testing for Mercedes that has a lane change avoidance system. Basically, if you try to change lanes and it detects something in your blind spot, it actually steers the wheel back in the lane you were in automatically, and then it like sounds a little beep and like lets you know what just happened.
Hey, idiot, look out the window.
Right, exactly. But it actually, and then it has another system where like if something falls in on the road in front of you, or a car in front of you abruptly stops, it tries to avoid the accident by first stopping the car, and then I think it will swerve the car to the side if there's nothing impeding
right.
it. But he had it fail while he was using it. And luckily, he was paying attention enough to hit the brakes on purpose like and stop the car in time. But he started to think about who would have been at fault. Like, the system didn't do its job. And there's all these... You know, there's already precedent out there for this sort of stuff of, like, who would be at fault. Like, first of all, like, was the person using the system correctly, the autopilot system?
Right.
Was the person, and then if it did fail, if it was the autopilot system, was it a design problem, which is much harder to prove, or was there a bug in the code, which is easier to prove? So there's some, you know, differing... Right. Precedent out there. And
is the blame placed on the person because they weren't paying attention when they should be, even though it's an autopilot system?
Right.
You know, are they going to try to blame the person for that?
But these, moving forward, these are going to be, I think, issues for autopilot cars where it really is an autopilot.
Right.
In the sense that it's going to be autonomous. Because while, you know, distracted driving is a problem now, I can guarantee you that it will become much, much worse if there's an autopilot involved.
Oh, I can guarantee you that if my car has autopilot, I am not watching the road.
Yeah. I mean, it's a sort of a double-edged sword. If the systems are done correctly, which I think they probably could be now, and, you know, there could be a lot of technical workarounds. Basically, if the car feels that it's not safe, it just slams on the brakes. You know, or whatever.
Right.
There's definitely ways to overcome these problems. And like they said, they have built-in self-tests and everything else.
Yeah, that's the else statement.
Yeah.
Brake dot slam.
Yeah, exactly. But everything's in a try-catch.
Right.
And the catch is just brake. Brakes, brakes dot on.
Oh, simple programming jokes.
Yeah, but... Anyway, they're just interesting problems that we're going to have to deal with, and not that I don't think they're able to be overcome, but I mean, something as simple, like if you think about this autopilot system, you know, you give this scenario where, oh, I'm definitely not going to be paying attention to the road. And everyone's like, well, see, that's going to be awful. But it's like, well, maybe if it encounters something, it gives you a warning beep, like, you know, danger, danger. And like, you're immediately at attention. Like,
right.
You know, you're going to be able to react pretty quickly. But I mean, I just, knowing the reaction time of humans just in general, like even if you're in total control of the car, like totally paying attention, totally aware, the best driver ever, you have the best record, you've never been in a wreck, you are a human, and because you are a human,
you're faulty.
There's a delay in your processing, and it's several milliseconds, and that is a lot of time on the road. That's when you're doing 60 miles an hour, yeah. That's a lot of distance.
Yeah, I mean, in DC traffic, humans can't hit the brakes before they hit the car in front of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's just too fast.
When you're doing 60 miles an hour, that's 88 feet per second. Every second you've traveled 88 feet. You know, that and your car can only stop at best in 120 feet.
Yeah, so a quarter of a second you travel 20 feet, you're already well into the bumper of the car in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, you're just not hitting the brakes.
Exactly. Now, maybe you were following too closely to begin with. But if we want traffic to go down and wait times to go down on the highways, we're going to have to rely on these automated systems to schedule the traffic, pack the cars in closer, and manage all those problems. Otherwise, we're going to have the same gridlock that we have now. So yep. Anyway,
I can't wait for it.
It's an I can't wait for all the gridlock.
It's going to be like the cars in a Minority Report.
Yeah, those things were cool.
You just get in and they go. So the two articles that I saw that just popped up yesterday and today, the first one is a release from Microsoft. Some new malware comes out. It's a rootkit. You know, we talked about rootkits before. They hide themselves. You don't know they're there, and they alter the way your system works. And normally you can remove them from some external means, like you boot into some boot disk. You know, you can't remove it from within Windows because it hides Windows. So you have to get some sort of boot disk to remove it. But Microsoft is saying that a new rootkit that comes out, they're calling it Papereb. I'm not really sure.
No clue.
It's win32.popureb is the name of the rootkit. They're saying, nothing's going to get rid of this. It totally infiltrates your system. If we detect that you get this, our only recommendation is that you put in the system restore CDs. First, wipe the MBR, and then put in the system restore CD and restore your computer to factory.
Yeah.
Because there's just no way to get rid of it. And that, the only reason I put this in here, I mean, that really threw me for a loop. Like, there is no antivirus, anti-malware technology out there that can get rid of this. They're just telling you, kill your computer.
I'm guessing that's just the recommended action right now. I'm sure they'll, you know, they're probably working for a solution. You know, if they just don't understand how it operates right now, you know, that they can't.
But that's what gets me. I mean, like, most manufacturers know how rootkits, you know, generally work. That even if they change it up a little bit, they have an idea. But this one, they're just like, throw their hands up. We don't know.
Yeah.
Just format your computer.
Format Siegel and dash
seriously,
S.
Like that's what really got me. But I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but Microsoft does have a rootkit removal tool. I blogged about it on kevinslonka.com. So if
actually,
you go,
yeah, I heard this on coincidentally, I was listening to Windows Weekly, and I think Paul Thurrott was talking about
interesting.
It.
Interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a boot disk. So you download the ISO for whatever you have, a 32-bit PC or a 64-bit PC, burn it to a CD. And then if you think you might have malware or a rootkit, just boot your computer to that CD, and it's an anti-malware tool that will run outside of Windows, so it's able to clean rootkits.
Pretty
so,
sweet.
So everybody should get this. It's free. You know, go to kevinslonka.com. I have the direct links for them. If you'd rather get it from Microsoft, just go there and search for rootkit, and you'll find the page. And everybody should run this. I mean, doesn't matter. Just go get it. It's free. Why would you not run this and get rid of rootkits on your system? And the other article that I popped up, I want to talk more about it next week once we have a chance to play with it, but apparently Google was trying again at social networking. They already tried once with Buzz, their Twitter competitor, and that failed.
And they have profiles still.
They still have profiles, but apparently now they're introducing Google Plus, which is Google and the plus sign. And they say it happens to look very much like Facebook. But they're saying it differs enough that it's more for design sharing with groups like colleagues. You know, it's kind of what, do you remember, it was a bunch of Slongcasts ago, we had this stick figure animation video that somebody described like how social networking should be. It might have come out of Google, like how they thought social networking should be. And it's like, you have your separate groups. You don't want people in your family group to know what you did last weekend with your friends group.
Oh, yeah.
So
I
when you share
that.
Something with your friends, it doesn't go to your family.
Yeah.
I think this is Google, that coming to fruition. You right. know, what they originally planned up in a stick figure video, they've now made. So I haven't played with it. Have you played with it?
No, I just clicked the link. I hadn't even heard of it.
Yeah, this just popped up in my feed this afternoon.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm surprised there hasn't been more news on this. But, you know, and then they also mentioned Orkut, like the whole Google Orkut thing. Like, I actually made an account on that
a while
back.
It's big
in Brazil. It's big in Brazil.
Yeah, I've never used that. I know it's there, but I've never tried it.
Yeah, I think I made an account. Well, I think you get an account if you have a Google account automatically, but I think I logged in and I don't remember doing much with it.
We should all move to Orkut.
Orkut.
Right now.
Orkut.
But definitely, like the name, Orkut. You know, everybody go out and try Google Plus and let us know what you think. You know, see if it's a Facebook killer or not.
Well, it says it's by invitation only, so unless you have an invitation, you're shit out of luck, I think.
You might be one of those lucky people, like with the Gmail invites, that you got an account and you have 3 invites you can send to your friends. So, if you're lucky enough to be using Google+, let us know what it's like. Give us an invite. so we could cover it.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be nice.
But if I just want to say right now, without knowing anything else about it, if this is that stick figure animation coming to fruition, this is going to be the Social Network to beat.
Yeah.
Because that whole animation was social networking done the right way. So if this is that, then that is cool.
It is cool.
So anything else you saw this past week? That was the only two extra things I saw.
Nope.
Cool. So that is it for this week's edition of the Slongcast. As usual, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. My username is Slongcack. Ryan, where can people go to learn more about you?
You can find me at www.lancipedia.com or on Twitter at @RyanLancy.
And as always, if you want us to talk about something on the show, just bookmark it on Delicious. Next week's episode is episode 38, so tag it, Slongcast038, and we will be sure to talk about that story for you. And we will hopefully see you next week. Dovidzhenya!